Wedge heard Jansen's voice.
They're ugly.
Uglies were hodgepodge rigs assembled from components of normal fighters. Wedge fired at a patchwork vehicle and watched it shudder into a starboard turn. His second shot sheared through its midsection just behind the cockpit. Wedge saw components and perhaps crew falling out of either portion of the bisected doomed craft. Another oncoming ugly, which looked like a wingless, rudderless Imperial shuttle, fired thin, seemingly endless streams of red lasers at Wedge's TIE fighter. He juked left, continued that way as the broadening pattern of energy pursued. He saw the ugly side-mounted tube firing a concussion missile. There had been no warning from the TIE sensor lock alarm, and the missile came in straight at him at less than a click's distance. A blur accelerated so fast there was no chance he could maneuver out of its way. Wedge relaxed the pressure on the pilot's yoke. In the split second, his twin ion engines lost thrust. He dropped back into the wash of laser he'd been avoiding. Lasers flashed across him. The concussion missile flashed past his viewport, missing him by maybe 10 meters. Then he emerged from the other side of the laser pattern, unscratched. He smiled grimly. He'd realized almost too late that the pilot had been firing targeting lasers, beams bright enough to see, but not to do damage. Bright enough to spook a fighter into fleeing before them in a predictable path, right into the line of a fixed missile tube. Kel stood his X-Wing on its tail and bled power from his bow shields into his thrusters. Ten, you're my wing. Let's go high road.
Five, acknowledge.
Tyria followed his maneuver almost point for point. Phelan roared down from above, linked lasers firing. Her shot hit an ugly fuselage, crisping a black circle at the aft end. She leveled off below it, inverted, and climbed toward its belly.
Die, fighter! Break off! We surrender!
The two uglies that had been climbing to engage abruptly broke off and fled. Kel rolled down onto his port wing and pursued.
Five, ten,
Tyria said.
I don't think they're running. This is strategic.
Kel eased back on his stick. What makes you think so?
I don't know.
Kel eyeballed their flight angle, calculated that it would take them beyond the engagement zone over a series of craters. Over one large crater in particular. Big trough, ten, tighten up. He dove to the lunar surface and headed through the broadening engagement zone, angling to reach the far side of the battle and beyond. Jasmine had kept up a steady stream of fire against the ugly in her bracket. The deadly red beams penetrated the fighter's aft end. The ugly bent, arching its back like a wounded animal as the engines detonated, tearing the fuselage in half. Donos commended her.
Good shooting, too.
Thanks, nine, Jasmine answered. That's five.
Five here,
Kel responded. No, Kel, I mean that's five kills. I'm an ace.
Two, wait for the debriefing. In this unit, your wingman may get credit for your kills. But congratulations.
Jasmine vectored toward a pair of oncoming uglies. Abruptly, they veered away at right angles to her flight path. She followed. Nine stayed on her wing. Kel heard two more ugly pilots surrender. His snub fighter roared over the moon's surface meters above the irregular ground, occasionally dropping closer as he and Tyria headed over deep impact craters. Then he saw them. Three treaded vehicles peering just over the far rim. They were already in weapons range, only a couple of seconds away. Switching to torps, firing.
Firing,
Tyria repeated. Their proton torpedoes flashed across the distance. Kel's hit the vehicle on the left, while Tyria's hit a laser cannon-armed crawler in the middle. All three vehicles were caught in the dual blast. Then the comm crackled with Jesmyn's pained voice.
Behind him!
Kel and Tyria vectored in behind Jesmyn and Donos. Both were hit, Jesmyn the worst. A laser blast had struck her cockpit, and she was in an arc, heading toward one of the nearest hills. Kel shouted, Jasmine!
Level off!
Her words and the way she was struggling to say them added up to one thing. Her inertial compensator was no longer working, and she was being crushed back into her seat by the high-speed arc she was performing. She was seconds from hitting the hillside.
Jasmine, punch out!
There was no answer. Kel goosed his thrusters until he was just to the side of and beneath Jasmine's X-Wing. His wing contacted hers with a scrape, checking and reversing her roll. As delicately as he could, Kel rose toward the underside of her fighter. Jasmine's roll brought her port wing down on top of Kel's. The stick under his hands shuddered. Jasmine's rotation forced him down. He tried to keep his fighter in line through sheer strength. If he could just bring Jasmine's nose up, he might angle her out of the atmosphere, enable the Nara to catch up to her. Kel's portside engines whined and shut down. Jasmine's X-Wing, now headed in a long arc toward the ground, leaped out ahead of him.
No! Fighter two, come in!
Jasmine's fighter hit the lunar surface. It shredded into tons of shrapnel, rolling across rocks and lunar pockmarks. The pirate's base was an elderly, damaged Kuat Super Transport 6 container ship. With its engines in the shape they were, Wedge doubted the vessel would ever lift, even from the half-standard gravity of this moon. A smaller hauler, an aging Corellian bulk freighter, apparently served to haul half squads of uglies through hyperspace to whichever areas the bandits chose to patrol. The pirate captain faced Wedge sullenly.
We have the right to attack intruders. This is an unclaimed world. There's no law here.
Wedge leaned close to the pirate.
You filth killed one of my pilots to protect your right to have no laws. Therefore, my crew and I are going to help ourselves to whatever supplies we need. Then, we're going to take off and blow a hole in your beloved blood nest, venting the atmosphere. Then we'll inform the New Republic military that there's a nice hard vacuum warehouse here, full of stolen goods and depressurized bodies. If any of you would like passage to some other system before we blow this place to pieces, I suggest you think about what you can offer us.
Not goods. We'll take what we want anyway. Information.
Wedge spun on his heel and left the mess. Jansen followed.
Wedge, Cal's in sickbay. Violent nausea.
Wedge gave him a startled look.
What does our good Dr. Fannin say?
He says Cal is a real mess and shouldn't be given a job frying tubers for the Alliance, much less flying X-Wings.
I'll check it out.
Kel Tanner, somber and pale, gulped when he saw Wedge enter the room, obviously aware he was in for a dressing down. Wedge looked at him in bewilderment.
I don't know how you do it. You do such good work, then you screw everything up.
Kel nodded.
It's my fault Jasmine is dead, I know that. Not that, you idiot! It's that tank driver's fault she's dead. It's her body's fault for failing her, letting her fall unconscious when she could have used those extra seconds you gave her to reach her ejection control. The maneuver you pulled trying to rescue her was crazy and brilliant.
Kel drew back from the anger in Wedge's voice. He looked confused. Then what?
The screw-up? Wedge waved at the sick bay. It's this. You think you failed. You go to pieces. Now get up. Get back into uniform. I want you to search the pirate base for explosives. We need you.
Kel started to rise, then pain crossed his face.
That's part of it, too, isn't it?
Wedge kept most of the scorn out of his voice, leaving in just enough for Kel to detect.
Someone needs you, and you go to pieces. Well, we do need you, right now. What's it going to be?
Kel was changing into a clean jumpsuit when the door to his quarters slid open and Tyria stepped in. Her expression was tight, worried.
What have you been up to?
Making sure Blood Nest wasn't rigged to blow.
Which it was. How's Min?
Although Donis's X-Wing had been damaged and his droid had been destroyed, the pilot had received only a slight concussion. Nevertheless, he lay in sickbay, mute
and unresponsive. Tyria shook her head. I don't know. Tom Fainan doesn't know. He just lies there, staring off into nowhere. If this collapse goes on his record, that's it for his career as a pilot.
Or maybe it should be. Maybe he's too close to dissolving to fly again.
Tyria frowned at him. That's not for you to say. I know. That's why I'm going along with this scheme. He shrugged. It's the least I can do. I failed to save Jesmyn. Maybe I can help with Min. Don't say that. I heard what you tried with Jesmyn. That was tremendous.
It would have been tremendous if it had worked. It failed, so it was just futile.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
You knew those two ugly pilots were lures. Was that something you'd run into before?
She shook her head.
I just felt it. I almost saw you being vaped.
Could that have been the force at work?
I don't think so. I wasn't concentrating on using the force.
What's it like when you do concentrate?
She gave him a bitter smile. It's like putting my toe into a nice, warm river back on Tuprara, and starting to slide in, and then looking over my shoulder and seeing that my ancestors for 20 generations back have all lined up behind me with stern expressions to make sure I'm doing it right. And I suddenly realized that if I go into the water, I'll drown. That's what the force is like to me.
Shall we trade? Asked the warlord Zinj.
Admiral Trigget expansively gestured.
You go first. You are the warlord.
True. You remember Nightcaller?
Trigget snorted.
One of your TIE fighter corvettes. Thank you for forwarding their reports to me. It's good to know there is a ship undergoing an even less eventful mission than my own.
Zinj twisted his face into something like an indulgent smile.
What if I told you that Nightcaller's last several stops have all been visited, or to be more accurate, smashed, by rebel forces?
Trigger took a half step back. The ship is being shadowed.
Correct. I would appreciate it if you would take care of the matter.
At once.
Well, perhaps not. The matter I called you about may be of more importance. Not long ago, Talisia, in the Morabi system, was temporarily used as a secret base by Rogue Squadron. The visual data we're receiving suggests a wide variety of ships, X-wings, A-wings, rebel transports.
Then by all means, deal with it. I'll send you, Provocateur as support. Nightcaller and Constrictor likewise.
In a service conduit above the corridor accessing the officers' quarters, Kel Tanner hung upside down. It wasn't a pose he preferred, but the relay box he was servicing was in the vertical conduit halfway between the corridor and the service shaft above. Kel was convinced Jansen had given him this assignment as punishment for letting Jesmyn Akbar die. Then he heard footsteps and voices beneath him. He heard the name Donos and went very still. The first voice was Wedge's.
As soon as we have to scramble for action, the secret's out.
The second was Jansen's. We could arrange it so that Donos was part of the off-duty pilot group.
And risk the lives of the others if it's another ambush? No, Wes. But if you can think of anything I can reasonably do, reasonably, I want to hear about it.
Footsteps moved away. Kel looked down. He could see just the back of Jansen's head. The lieutenant had his head down, thinking the situation over. Thinking about Donos. Wedge and Jansen both knew Donos had been incapacitated. They knew the Wraiths were covering it up. But none of the Wraiths had realized that those two were doing the same, giving them time. Kel grabbed the edge of the shaft, levered his legs free, and dropped to the corridor below. Jansen spun at the sound of something hitting the metal floor behind him. Kel came forward.
Sitzbit! Tanner! You almost gave me a heart attack.
What do you want? Why didn't you turn him in?
Who?
Jansen asked.
Min Donos.
For what?
Don't. I know you know.
Jansen let his face settle into determined lines. Then you know why.
You're giving him a chance.
That's right.
I didn't think you'd do that.
for anyone.
Jansen didn't bother to hide his confusion.
What do you mean?
I always thought, with you, it was one real mistake and boom. Realization hit Jansen like the bow wave of a proton explosion.
No, Taner. Not with Min, not with your father, not with anyone.
I never would have believed that before a moment ago.
But you do believe it now.
Kel looked away before meeting the lieutenant's eyes again.
Jansen, you're always going to be the man who killed my father. But maybe the other stuff, everything I thought went with it, Jansen the killer, Jansen the lurker, maybe that was just a kid's fears.
Kel crouched. Jansen stepped to the side, bracing himself for the leap of attack. But Kel jumped straight up, scrambling into an overhead shaft.
Twelve X-Wing snub fighters roared down into the atmosphere. This was a dark world with a polluted sky, its atmosphere formed from gases and smoke hurled from active volcanoes. 4 kilometers ahead, the TIE interceptor was distantly visible. Mindonos, the X-Wing squadron commander, looked around in confusion. This wasn't right. He'd been through this already. This mission could lead only to death. He was on Gravin 7, and all of Talon's squadron would die. Again. The interceptor abruptly lost speed and heeled over to starboard. Donna smiled. Its engine trouble had to have worsened. It headed straight toward the gap between two giant volcanoes, straight toward the trap, the ambush. They were all about to die. Talon leader, to squad, break off! Omega signal! He rolled up on his port wing and curved in a tight arc away from the volcanoes, away from them. The other Talons were falling. They sped down their destined path toward annihilation. Leader to group! Break off! Follow me!
A woman's voice.
Can't do it, sir.
12, is that you?
Yes, sir.
Follow me. That's an order.
No, sir.
Donor felt an unfamiliar weight crushing his chest. It wasn't acceleration. It was the inevitability of those pilots' needless deaths.
Please, 12.
Her voice turned scornful.
Don't please me, Lieutenant. You don't care enough about yourself to live, so you don't care a damn about us.
You're wrong. I do care. Turn back.
Swear it.
I swear it. Turn back.
The canopy of his X-Wing went black, and the roar of his engines died. A white slit appeared where his canopy should rise, but it opened on a port side hinge rather than behind him.
He was in the Nightcaller's simulator lounge. Sweating, trembling, he stared into the faces of Tyria, Chalen, Kel, and Face, all wearing headsets and somber expressions. The pressure in Jonas's chest snapped. It became a ball of pure rage.
You bastards! How could you have put me through that again?
It was Tyria who answered.
What choice did you leave us? You were just lying there, trying to die.
That's my right!
Dono stood and threw his best punch at Kel, who quickly shoved him off balance.
Kel said, do you have the right to mourn a droid so deeply that you don't give a damn about Jasmine Akbar dying?
Shiner!
Suddenly, all the fight left Donos. Grief, like a hole in his body, bent him double. Tyria was bending over him, shaking him.
What is it about that droid?
He looked up at her, saw her incomprehension.
The last...
She stared down into his eyes, then she looked startled.
The last Talon. He was the last Talon, wasn't he?
Donos nodded.
He's gone now.
Min. Tyria pulled him to her hard. We need you here. We're your squad now.
Phelan followed Donos at a discreet distance, making sure he made it back to his quarters. Kel and Tyria sat alone. Then Kel said,
that was a good idea,
about Shiner being the last Talon.
Thanks.
Another insight? Like the ambush those pirates set up?
Something like that.
Kel studied her. You remember a while back when I told you I loved you? And you told me it was just a puddle on the floor, and then you put my face into that puddle?
She managed a sympathetic smile.
Of course I remember.
Well, I have something to tell you. After I realized you were right, I decided that it was enough to be your friend.
Good.
Then I fell in love with you again. Her expression became one of dismay and exasperation.
Oh, Kel.
He sighed. But now, like the galaxy's worst general, I'm telling you my objective. I'm going to win your heart. I just don't know how I'm going to do it, you being forewarned and all. She lunged at him. Her tackle took him off the end of the sofa. Suddenly, she was atop him on the floor, her arms around his neck, kissing him. In spite of his confusion, he remembered to wrap her up in his arms so she couldn't escape when she regained her senses. The next morning, Wedge stepped into the office's mess, took a quick look around, and froze. Donos was among the other rakes, chatting, laughing. Face, on the other hand, had dark circles under his eyes. He had obviously lost sleep, but he seemed cheerful enough. Kel and Tyria looked just as bad, sleep-deprived and weary, yet they seemed even more than cheerful. Wedge's sudden appearance caught the rake's attention. Their conversation cut off, and they turned to look at him. He straightened and nodded sardonically at Face. In a mild tone, he said, "Captain Darillion, to the bridge." Face scrambled up. He wouldn't really be going to the bridge. Darillion's seat of command was the comm center. Wedge jerked his head for Jansen to join him. They headed toward Nightcrawler's true bridge. As they walked, Wedge asked, "What's with Min?"
"I don't know. They're not telling me. But he seems to be functional."
"Good. One crisis averted. And what's with all the tired faces?"
Jansen shrugged.
I don't know.
Maybe a late-night sabacc game they don't invite senior officers to?
Fine. Anything else you don't know?
Yes. Something happened with Kel yesterday, Jansen said.
What?
I don't know.
Wedge stopped short and gave Jansen a reproving look.
No, really, I don't know. We talked about his father. It seems he'd been thinking of me as some sort of avenging monster who vaped people for screw-ups. I also got the impression that he really hadn't been plotting my death every time he came near me. In fact, that he might have been scared stiff.
That can actually look the same, Witch said.
Face sat in the comm officer's chair and activated the voice and visual translators as the imposing image of Warlord Zinge materialized before him. Face broadened his smile to cover his surprise.
"My lord, I am honored."
Zinge's smile was one of condescension and amusement.
"But not honored enough to do your job correctly."
Face let his eyebrows rise. How had Darillion responded to scorn in his memoirs? With outrage. But the man would never direct an angry response to Warlord Zinge. No, hurt was the order of the day.
"My lord, I have failed you in some way. It's the life of a pirate for Darillion."
"Oh, stop being such a baby."
Zinge heaved an annoyed sigh.
"I received the relay of your report on the visit to Bloodnest."
Pretending not to be fully recovered from the wound to his pride, Face shrugged.
"A pity they chose to reject your offer, but since my avoidance of their ambush was so brilliantly successful, I feel they will be more cordial when I return."
Zinge shook his head.
"I don't believe so. Bloodnest is gone."
Face leaned forward and assumed an incredulous expression.
"They fled?"
"After you departed, Bloodnest was destroyed. In fact, every site you've visited in the last several weeks has subsequently been visited by Alliance pilots or agents."
"No. At the next stop in my mission, I'll pretend to jump out, then lie in wait for them. I'll destroy them."
"Yes. But not yet. I have a more important mission for you."
Zinge smiled.
"You're going to help that fool Trigget destroy a rebel base."
Once everyone was reseated at breakfast, Wedge addressed them.
"We have a problem.
Zinge has told our Captain Darillion to make rendezvous with the supply ship Hawkbat to replenish expended fuel and supplies, and to pick up a load of surveillance satellites we can deploy at our next scheduled stop to acquire data on our pursuers. He also wants the Hawkbat's master to come over for an inspection tour of the ship and a talk with Darillion.
Oh, wonderful, Kel said.
Wedge continued. Also, if Nightcaller is participating in the battle at Talisia, Zinge is going to expect us to field our full complement of TIE fighters, which is supposed to be 4, not 2.
The TIE fighters are no problem, Phelan said. They're all over the galaxy. We can steal 2.
Phelan spoke up eagerly. The rendezvous is no problem either. We simply need to get to the rendezvous site and say, oh no, we're all down with the Tastigan flu. Sure, come over. Hope you don't mind if we infect you.
Face smiled. What if it's not us who gets contaminated?
Wedge looked at him with interest.
Go on. Zinge transmitted us the Hawkbat's current schedule so we could arrange a rendezvous at our mutual convenience. What if we choose the planet where they're most likely to be offering shore leave? We wraiths go over there and expose the enemy to some sort of disease. Then it's the Hawkbat's captain who has to report we couldn't meet because of an inconvenient contagion.
The world of Storinol grew in Nara's viewscreen. Lush green countryside, rivers cascading down stepped hillsides, forest-sized tropical flower gardens, and cities of graceful lines and dimensions. Kel landed where he was instructed at one of the spaceport's bunkers. A viewscreen on the bunker wall displayed primitive line graphics, instructing him how to maneuver the waiting shuttle to its landing pad in the city.
There are too many unknown factors in this mission, Wedge reflected. Storinol was still under Imperial control, but it was said to be leaning toward possible alliance with the New Republic, or Warlord Zinge. They had not yet decided exactly which disease agent they'd use to infect the crew of the Hawkbat, but the first problem was going to be customs. Face had made them all disguises, based on stereotypes familiar to customs officials, in the hopes that the inspectors would simply dismiss them. Wes Jansen tugged at his lengthy white beard. His bodyguards, Phelan and Atril Taban, wearing black body stockings, flanked him. Piggy, in the full regalia of a Gamorrean warrior, followed with a vibro axe. Senator in exile Iskit Tyestin from Bakura, Jansen said. While Storinol, for the most part, followed the Imperial doctrine of employing no non-humans, the planet had a small but visible Gamorrean population. Most were guards, whose chief role was to be visible and exotic for the entertainment of tourists. The wraiths realized that bringing too many non-humans onto the planet could only attract additional unwanted attention, so it was decided that Grindr would serve best by staying an unknown, a wild card to draw when needed. Runt was charged with the very uncomfortable duty of parking his X-Wing on one of Storinol's distant moons and waiting for an emergency signal. Ton Fanon's disguise was based on his real-life misfortunes. He wore false prosthetics to conceal even more of his flesh and played the part of a test pilot, obviously down on his luck. He passed inspection easily, as did Tyria, portraying his long-suffering wife. Wedge, Face, and Donos wore rough country ponchos woven from a heavy brown cloth that looked gritty and sand-filled. Their hair and false mustaches were cut to identical lengths. They looked like 3 yokels from some outer rim colony world who'd blown their savings on a single trip to a more civilized world to search for brides to bring back home. Kel ambled down the ramp. He gave the inspector a knowing smile. Imagine being trapped aboard a shuttle with them for 3 days. Phanem's group, including Tyria and Kel, and calling themselves Plague Group, was charged with acquiring disease agents.
I wish Grindr were here,
Phanem said, tapping irritably at the terminal keyboard in their hotel suite, scrolling past one disease after another.
Boston Red Rash. Not too hit or miss. Plus Grindr might catch it, and we'd never hear the end of that. Bandonian Plague. Too severe.
Hey. He abruptly focused on one entry and brought it up to read more. Kel leaned in closer.
What is it?
Bunkered sewer disorder.
Yuck,
Tyria said. Sounds disgusting.
Not as bad as it sounds. A couple of centuries back, the Bunkered Corporation on Coruscant engineered a bacterium that does a better job of breaking down sewage for recycling. And believe me, Coruscant needs all the help it can get. But if this bacteria gets into the human digestive system, it attacks what you eat as soon as you eat it, giving you the equivalent of food poisoning. And it responds very well to standard medicines, so there's no danger of loss of life.
Really? Wedge said. I thought all you Imperial Navy boys were TIE fighter pilots.
The three Yoko brothers sat surrounded by hawkback crewmen in the Sunfruit Promenade, a roof patio flanked by flower gardens. The crew was happy to put up with the stupid questions because the men kept buying drinks for everyone. A crewman named Rondel laughed.
Do you think a Star Destroyer can manage with just a bridge crew and 100 pilots?
Well, I didn't think about it, really. So, when it's time to go home, you don't all just hop in your TIE fighters and blast off for space?
Rondel smirked.
No, when it's time to leave, we all hop in a shuttle and go up.
Wedge forced himself to speak with excited admiration.
A shuttle? Is yours the Doran Star? That's the one we were in.
Rondel fixed him with an aggravated stare.
Now, if that was our shuttle, too, how would we have gotten groundside before you got here?
Well, I don't know.
No. Ours are the Hawkbat's Perch and the Hawkbat's Vigil.
Plague Group returned from the Skohar Xenohealth Institute triumphant. They met with the mustachioed idiots of Yokel Group and Phelan, representing Joyride Group, who had discovered that there were four TIEs ready to fly in case of attack in a bunker at the spaceport. The Wraiths would go into action that night. With Piggy pacing them on foot, Kel's skimmer neared Bunker 22 Aleph. Tyria sat beside him. Back in the skimmer's main bed, hidden among the refueling hoses and diagnostic gear, were Jansen, Fainan, and Grinder. The senior human guard stepped forward.
Orders?
Kel handed him his forged data card. It would have been far too much work to forge a proper set of work orders, allowing them to work on the Hawkbat's shuttles, so Grinder had planted a module in the hangar's comm device that would send back the authorization they needed without bothering the spaceport computer. The guard waved at the hangar doors, and they rolled open. Kel maneuvered the skimmer beside one of the shuttles. Jansen jumped out of the skimmer and came up beside him, and Kel felt once more faint surprise that his arrival failed to cause him to tense up. He turned to the second in command. It occurred to me as we were driving over here that there's an easy way to do this. We can just put the stuff in the air intake scoop. You'll be running on real air for the first few thousand meters, then switch to canned air. He smiled. We don't even have to break in. Fainan cocked his head to listen to his comlink.
Good news, Joyride. Plague out.
He looked at the others.
Runt is counting down for his run from the moon. If everything goes well, he'll be here in about an hour.
That's our time limit, Kel said.
It wasn't difficult for Joyride Group to steal one of the many cargo skimmers parked at the Revo spaceport, but what they were planning next would be tricky. After they had programmed the skimmer, Wedge, Atril, Phelan, and Face got aboard. Clustered at the bow of the thing and heading toward the TIE-ready bunker, they braced for the mild collision to come. By now, the sensors in the bunker would show the oncoming vehicle. The timing had to be perfect. They were 30 meters away. 20. 10. Then they hit the bunker wall, a bump that caused them to sway forward, momentarily off balance. Phelan counted. 3, 2, 1. The skimmer's engines whined as they over-revved, and suddenly the craft bounced an extra 2 meters into the air. As they felt the skimmer drop from under them, they jumped and landed on the bunker roof. Already there were sounds of oncoming feet. Then voices.
You there! What do you think you're doing?
Wait a second. There's nobody in it.
Smell that? An engine bearing's burned out. It must have come over here on its own.
Jote, take it back where it belongs.
Wedge heard the skimmer power up and glide off.
Runt's attack came with such swiftness that even the Wraiths, who timed his arrival nearly to the last second, were caught off guard by it. The X-Wing was suddenly over the spaceport, its engine screaming like some mythical demon, its laser cannons blasting at unoccupied portions of Durakree. Men and women on the field ran in the direction of any cover. An Imperial air raid alert filled the air. Bunkers all over the spaceport went dark for emergency blackout procedures. Runt passed over the field, then turned for another run. His lasers targeted a luggage skimmer and ignited its fuel cell, blowing bags and cases over a 50-meter radius. Then, just as Phelan had said they would, the roof doors of the bunker on which they stood began to open to release TIE fighters in response to the attack. The TIE fighter hangar was dark, as Wedge had counted on. As soon as the doors were open, he placed his grappling hook where the door edge met the Durakrete roof. Phelan would be doing the same at the other door. With a roar, two of the TIE fighters below lit up their engines, silhouetting themselves with ionic engine wash, and then leaped up into the sky. Before Runt could make his third pass over the spaceport, a circular slab of Durakrete, 60 meters from the Nara, rose from the ground. Beneath it was a gun emplacement. The rig rose into the air on a metal column, then rotated to track Runt's X-Wing. Kel, who had returned from his maintenance work to sit in readiness in the Nara's pilot seat, swore and hit his comm. Six, we have a ground emplacement setting up for your return.
Meet up, A-5.
Runt's X-Wing heeled over and headed west. Kel took the switch to light the shuttle's engines and guns. Jansen beside him said, if you do that, we're going to have to scramble out of here without our TIE fighter support.
Well, what do you recommend? We sit back and watch them flame Runt?
Jansen shook his head. Trust your squad mates, Kel. As if to punctuate his words, a brilliant needle of laser energy leaped from the top of the spaceport's main terminal building and hit the gun emplacement. Kel grinned. Donos. Sorry, I forgot. Face entered the bunker's command center, his pistol out and at the ready, Atril just behind him. He aimed his blaster at the guard on duty. Now, what's the standard recall code for the TIE fighters who just left? The two returning TIEs were slowing over the bunker when the command center comm board sounded.
Control, NF1, this is Central. Why did you break off pursuit of target?
Face activated his microphone. Central, the target's escape profile suggested an ambush.
Very well. Your men coming in safe?
Two eyeballs incoming hot and normal.
Two what?
Face swore to himself. Eyeballs, sir. That's rebel talk.
NF1, recite your day code.
Face switched the mic off and yanked it free of its housing. Leader, we've been made. The two TIE fighters descended to a smooth landing. Waiting in another TIE, Wedge kept his cockpit dark, though his engines were hot, and waited. The TIE's access hatches did not open. A moment later, their engines lit up again and they roared skyward. Three, fire! As soon as the fighter rose over him, Wedge triggered his laser. The blast shook his grounded vehicle, but hit the ascending starfighter dead on, hulling it. Phelan and her TIE fighter fired twice. Wedge instinctively leaned away from the descending, burning mess. It smashed down right next to his vehicle, showering it with half-melted debris. Though a squadron of TIE fighters followed them to the outer planet where Nightcrawler waited, their lead was such that they were able to dock their craft, orient themselves out system, and go to hyperspace before their pursuit reached them.
Nightcaller and Hawkbat made rendezvous at the appointed date in a system whose dim orange sun sustained no life on any of its seven planets. Hawkbat's captain, Bok Nabel, apologized for not being able to meet personally with Captain Darillion and explained that an unseemly illness was spreading through the crew. Quarantine measures were in force. Captain Darillion claimed to understand fully. The next mission was to visit a Zinj-owned alloy warehouse in the Tadorium system. First, Face, as Darillion's assistant, will visit. Then, this will be a standard stoop-and-shoot mission, Wedge told his pilot. With one difference. We know we're going to be recorded, because Zinj has ordered us to set out the spy satellites ourselves. So, as long as we'll be giving Zinj information, we want it to be the worst information possible. Cover, I want you to repaint all the X-Wings with Rogue Squadron colors. Pilots, spend some time today and tomorrow getting used to calling one another by Rogue call signs. And Face, when addressing me, call me Tycho once or twice. Face nodded. Face maintained a bored expression as Admiral Triggett laid out his plans for Nightcaller, the Corvette Constrictor, and the frigate Provocateur to attack the rogues in the Morrowey system. Face nodded. And your own TIE fighters will be the primary attack force?
Correct.
The hologram of Admiral Triggett leaned forward, and his tone became more confidential.
Now, I have something further to ask. How might I persuade you to give me the details of your, shall we say, unrecorded adventures at each of your stops?
Face froze. The Admiral had guessed. No. Triggett had only learned something about Captain Darillion's private negotiations on behalf of Warlord Zinj. If he had suspected the true identity of Nightcaller's crew, he would never have given Face the attack plan. Face swallowed.
Sir, let me explain. People see my little habits and think I am a shallow man. But I am an honorable officer and will not break faith with my commander.
He gave Triggett his most intense stare, abandoning all of Darillion's florid mannerisms.
It may be, sir, that I will leave Zinj's employ sometime in the future and enter yours. If I do, you will know from this encounter that I will always keep faith with you.
Triggett drew back.
Point taken, Captain.
Thank you, sir. And may I say, I would be pleased to serve under you in any formal capacity, but until I do...
Triggett gave him a faint smile.
Until you do, let us make no more assaults, no matter how well-intended, upon your honor. You surprise me, Captain Darillion.
I intend to do so again, sir.
Very well.
Triggett gave him an uncommonly gracious half-bow.
I'll see you at the rendezvous.
I look forward to it.
Triggett winked out. They swiveled toward the comm center doorway where Wedge stood waiting.
We have him, Wedge said.
It was the most elaborate deception they'd attempted to date. Face was on station in the comm center, acting out Darillion's part whenever communication was necessary. Wedge, Phelan, Jansen, and Atril were in TIE fighters, the rest in X-Wings. They emerged from hyperspace 100 light-years from the Morrowey system, into a system with a white dwarf for a sun. Nightcaller was the last ship on station. Already in formation, waiting to jump to the Morrowey system, were the Imperial Star Destroyer Implacable, the Imperial Escort Frigate Provocateur, and the Corellian Corvette Constrictor. 5 minutes from Implacable's arrival in Morrowey system, Lieutenant Gara Pettifell presented herself to the Admiral. We had a problem, sir. He blinked. Make it fast. The data from the Mort Project told us that Talisir was the probable site of rebel activities. And?
Sir, 80% of the statistical hits pointing to Talisir come from the same 22 parasite units. The only way that could happen is if the mobile parasites were attaching themselves to ships jumping back and forth between Talisir and neighboring systems. Every time the units changed ships, they'd pick up exactly the same thing. The Admiral turned to Implacable's commander.
Captain, drop us out of hyperspace immediately. Have communications prepare an alert. Tell them that Talacia is a trap. Their orders are to exit the system immediately.